25th, it's the Mental Illness edition of Radio Free Thinker. This week, an extended interview with Matt Harvey on mental illness, media, meaning, and living a full life. Let's begin episode 274.
It's time for Radio Free Thinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. The place where reason and reality cross sword, politics, religion, economics, and of course, science. Now let's get ready to be skeptical.
The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are away from the cosmos to know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are others, and we have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Hello, tis I, Don, your skeptical philosopher and political scientist. Join us today in the Radio Freethinker virtual studio, we have Matt Harvey, to help discuss the subject of mental illness, how it affects people's lives, and perhaps a little on how we can change our own attitude to help those around us who suffer from these problems. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks for letting me be on the show, Don.
We recently dedicated a show to Robin Williams, a well-known celebrity who succumbed to depression and bipolar disorder. I thought it was about time we took a look at mental illness in and of itself. I mentioned during the show that I didn't like it when people would sit there, with reference to Robin, stated that he committed suicide and also suffered from mental illness, as if the two subjects were not related. And in this particular case, they were the same thing. It got me thinking that most of what we know about mental illness is often mediated or filtered through the media, that most of our common experience is, well, fiction, as in through fictional TV shows or movies, that the more reality-based, and please let me put the word reality in heavy quotes here, that discussion of the subject is left to, like, talk shows, or not even talk shows, but celebrity gossip and that kind of programming. Most know that mental illness is a problem that our society has not dealt with well. And I think part of the reason is that most of us don't really have a good understanding of this affliction. So let's start off by looking at some stats. It's estimated that 1 in 5 people will suffer from some form of mental illness during their lifetime. This also means that most families will experience one family member who has to deal with mental illness. It's estimated that 8% of Canadians will experience major depression at some point in their lives. About 1% of Canadians suffer from bipolar disorder, or what we used to call manic depressives. About the same number of people suffer from schizophrenia. Anxiety disorder afflicts 5%. I should note that anxiety is something that everyone deals with, but it becomes a disorder when it affects your daily life. For example, a fear of crowds or open spaces to the point that it severely affects one's ability to interact with others, to go to social events, leaving one a virtual captive in their own home. Suicide accounts for about 1 in 4 of all deaths for those between 15 and 24, and about 16% of those from 25 to 44. One of the more disturbing trends is the rise of suicide rates in seniors, especially as baby boomer generation is starting to dominate this age group. Note that there isn't anything wrong with baby boomers in themselves, but this demographic represents a huge bulge in population. Seniors account for about 8% of the population 40 years ago. They currently are about 14%, and they're expected to peak at about 25% around 2036. It is estimated that mental illness will cost well over $7 billion a year, not only from direct care, but also from death and disability benefits. At first, I didn't understand that last bit. Death and disability benefits? But, well, those who succumb must be buried, insurance policies paid, survivor benefits given. Those who suffer often find themselves unable to work or injure themselves and thus end up on disability support. Many people who suffer from mental illness function well below their potential because of their illness. That costs us another $6 billion. Estimates vary widely, but anywhere from 1/4 to 3/4 of homeless people suffer from mental illness. So that's a bit about how mental illness affects society. But when we talk about mental illness, what are we talking about? Well, let's start with one that we all think we sort of know, but don't really, schizophrenia. This is not split personality, despite what we may have been told or what TV shows us. No, this is where people hear voices. No one else seems to hear. They often think that others are trying to insinuate thoughts into their mind. I mean, if I started hearing voices in my head that were not my own, I think it's not a stretch that I'd be a little paranoid. And, well, it's quite often for these sufferers to suffer from delusions. Some scientists think this condition may be caused by a misfiring of the brain such that, well, I often find myself talking to myself. Not out loud, but in my head. Of course, I know it's my own voice, me talking to me. But sufferers' brains lose this connection. So when they hear this voice, to them it seems like it has an external origin. Another common yet misunderstood one is depression. This is not feeling blue. This is feeling nothing at all, a total lack of emotion. This is when people can be so debilitated they can't even get out of bed.
Yeah. Sorry, if I can just jump in here. It's hard, and especially when someone just says, like, come on, just get out of bed. Come on, it's nothing. Let's go eat breakfast, whatever. Just man up. It's hard to deal with that one.
And it's a good point, you know, actually, Matt, that you're bringing up there, because, you know, mental illness is an illness. It is no less a disease than if you are suffering from the flu or the cold or anything like that. And I think a lot of people get the idea that mental illness is just a feeling. Like you say, it's just, you can just blow it away. It's not really a sickness. The idea that people don't see mental illness as a real illness.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, there's a different kind of stigma to it, that the brain is a different kind of organ, or the brain is a different kind of thing that can be afflicted. That there's something different there's something different to an illness or damage to the brain. And I think it's hard for people to understand that when you are depressed or you have anxiety issues that cannot be that can't be solved very easily, it's something else. I don't know. There's some distance that people can't understand. They can't cross that bridge where, like you were talking about with Robin Williams, they're connected with. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to state.
And another mental illness that often gets the similar sort of inane advice is anxiety disorder. This is not a case of being a little shy, being nervous before an interview. No, we're talking about a pending sense of dread so great that you may never go out. You find it hard to engage in any activity because, well, you just know it's going to go wrong. An example that actually I experience on occasion is sometimes I'll see someone like running to catch a bus. I just don't see them running. I see them tripping at full gait, smashing their face into the ground, blood, bones, pain. And it's a thought I can't ignore. I can't push it away. And somehow I know that would happen the next time I run to the bus. And that's it's forgive the term in this context. You know, it's crazy, but at the same time, you just have this pending sense of dread. Or they might wake up in the morning with, again, this sort of sense of foreboding that something terrible is going to happen. It paralyzes you so that you don't want to even move. You spend all your mental energy just sort of keeping still, trying not to think, trying not to panic. We'll talk about a bit more about that later, but it's one of the more common and more debilitating illnesses that's out there. What makes this last thought so pernicious is that the sufferer knows it's illogical, that there is no danger, but they still feel it. It's like one of those classic problems in philosophy. Does someone who has been harmed in no way, that is, there's no actual body or nerve damage, yet they say they feel pain, is that pain real or not? Well, to the sufferer, philosophy be damned, it's real. Fortunately for me, I only get glimpses of this, but true sufferers have this as a constant companion, some so severe that, again, they can't leave their house. They cannot lead anything like a normal life. A big two-for of mental illness is bipolar disorder, or what we used to call manic depressives. Many of us claim that we've suffered from this in ourselves as sort of a way to account for times when we're sort of lazy and lethargic, and then those times when we have these little spurts of activity and get things done. That is not what we're talking about, any more than one might be sort of talking about a bathtub is also a lake. I call it a two-for because sufferers go through two phases, the first one being depression, and we've already sort of talked about that. But combine that with a manic disorder. During their manic phases, sufferers are often feel quite fantastic, like they're high on a drug. They also tend to focus on sort of single tasks. Like one example I came across was a person who was going on lavish spending sprees, engaging in promiscuity and risky behavior, emptying their bank account while simultaneously ignoring normal but unexciting behavior like feeding their child. And I don't want to make this sort of a moral judgment. It's more what we would call an adrenaline junkie. The difference between being in a manic phase often involves poor judgment or borderline delusional thoughts. Again, an example I've heard about was someone who bought all the snake bite kits in the pharmacies around them because they were convinced there's going to be an invasion of snakes. This is not a complete list. There are panic disorders, phobias, eating disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and we're not even touching on the more, quote, clinical ones like autism or fetal alcohol syndrome. I mentioned that the inspiration for this segment, for me, was the death of Robin Williams. Not that I haven't thought about this topic before. That said, it was the complete distortion of the science of mental illness, the gossipy nature of the reporting, if you can call gossiping reporting at all, and perhaps worst of all, it was the lack of valid discussion on the issue. Once again, the old tired stereotypes were touted out, the not completely bad but hackneyed advice, the what you should do and what you should be looking for. There was no real discussion, at least in the mainstream media. So how much more mainstream can you get than Radio Free Thinker? So we thought that we would go and make an attempt to change the tone and context of the discussion of mental illness. So Matt, I've kind of set a stage here. You were willing to come on the air, if I dare say you were somewhat eager to take this chance to speak your mind about this issue. So I have to ask, why?
I think we both know the answer to that question, but I love the setup. So yes, my name is Matthew and I am afflicted by bipolar disorder. You can call that type 1 bipolar disorder, and Don went over how about 1% of Canadians are afflicted with it, but I've heard numbers as high as 2% or 2.5%, but yes, I have bipolar disorder, and it's something that I've been afflicted with for about 8 years now. It's been a long road, one with its ups and downs, pun intended. But I've come a long way, and I'm here to help others come a long way by reducing the stigma, by educating, and having a little fun along the way.
I want to say good, but I'm not quite sure if that's an appropriate comment to make considering the context. But before we move on too much, a part of your idea was to sort of raise the profile and visibility of the topic. And as you say, you have battled your own demons. So in a more sort of clinical sense, I gave a bit of a rundown of bipolar. Was that accurate or was I off?
Yeah, so I mean, you're close, and it's really hard to get good examples. I mean, you were talking about, being fearful of the fact that there's going to be a snake invasion or something along those lines, but that's not just it. There's so much more to it, and it's not just these crazy thoughts, but it is the step doing things you're not necessarily, quote-unquote, supposed to do. Being promiscuous, making jumps and leaps that you wouldn't usually do. Trying to think of an example here, but I remember being in hospital the first time and getting so worked up that all I could do was bounce around a room and do Jim Carrey impressions for about half an hour. There's just a bucket list of just a grocery list of things that that can affect you, and it's a tough thing to say. In terms of the clinical information, you are correct. There's and you're fairly accurate there. One thing, like I said, that there's different kinds of bipolar disorder. I'm someone who's type 1. See, I'm someone who goes completely off the crazy spectrum. You can kind of call this the Charlie Sheen effect, where you go totally tiger blood or whatever you want to call it. And then after that, after, you know, 2 weeks or something along those lines, you go all the way down, down the valley, of depression. Type 2 bipolar disorder, is where you have, you go into a hypomania, which is, halfway there, right? You are, extremely ecstatic. You do still, push over into the, promiscuity end of things and things you shouldn't be doing and, spending sprees and things like this, but you can still be in your normal life. And then down after that, there are a couple other types of bipolar disorder, such as rapid cycling, where you go through at least 4 different phases a year. That being mania, depression, mania, depression. So just like anything, there's a spectrum, on this clinical scale here. And, it's important to note that there are different kinds of us and, that we're all unique in our own way.
Wow. And yet I hate to say it because it kind of plays right into those stereotypes that we want to kind of get away from. But to help set the stage, you mentioned to me that one thing that has inspired you to take the word to the street, so to speak, is that as someone who has suffered mental illness, you also feel very fortunate that you had good support. So why are you not one of those homeless people who are talking to themselves or you know, what makes you feel so fortunate?
Well, I definitely still talk to myself, that's for sure. But yes, I did have good support. Now, to get personal, I...
You don't have to, you know that, right?
Oh, I totally know. So, so get a little personal here. When I was first diagnosed, I had my first mania when I was at university. And that was lucky. Yes, I was incredibly embarrassed by my actions around the people that I was closest with, like in my dormitory. But what that caused was those around me, those who cared, to get help, to seek help. And so were the RAs, and then they went to the health department. I was diagnosed there. They took me to the hospital where I was put in. And not just that, not to those around me, but my parents were huge support. My best friend at the time, she drove 4 hours overnight to see me the next day. I was very fortunate to have those around me, those people, to lift me up, to give me that strength. So I was very fortunate in that part. But it's not just those closest around you that are giving you that support. It's also that I was able to get great medical attention. What happened was I was actually able to get into a clinic at UBC called the Mood Disorders Clinic, Mood Disorders Centers of Excellence, into a program called First Episode. It was a study and an educational course in order to teach people about what was going on with them, how to relate with those around you, and how to recognize what's happening. My girlfriend at the time was there to take part in this. My family sat in. So it was an educational thing where both I and those around me, that support network I had, was able to find out what was going on, what different kinds of medications I'd be on, that kind of thing. But also the study was a 5-year study to start off with. And that came with free mental health care. I got a full-time psychologist and psychiatrist that was able to diagnose me constantly. It was able to get me medications and small medication changes. And so I was able to have this amazing access to health care that the people who are on the street, the people who don't get this kind of care, they're not even going to be close to how successful I'm going to be, because I get all of this care. And now this 5-year study turned into a 30-year study. So for the next 30 years, every 3 months, I get to go see somebody to take care of me. That is the kind of support that creates success. That is the kind of support that creates a special person who can actually add to this world.
Excellent. Okay, so let's start changing the world, or at least our little part of it. As I started out, one of the things that has annoyed me, disheartened me, was the mental illness play or theater that was brought out when Robin Williams succumbed to depression. There was a lot of talk about how great his life was, his legacy, how tragic it was that this happened. There were references to his struggles with substance abuse, but there was little or no effort to tie them all together. Often substance abuse is the only way some people can deal with mental illness because of the stigma attached to their condition. If you give it a thought, Robin and many others talked about their substance abuse and the like, but when was the last time you heard someone on a talk show discuss their struggle with mental illness that perhaps led to their substance abuse? I think that we may agree that the public portrayal of mental illness is pretty poor. And in that way, I must commend you, Matt, for coming out and helping rectify or correct the social or the public image of it. But what is your opinion of how mental illness is seen, at least in the media?
That's a broad question, and I just want to quickly touch on what you said about substance abuse. And yeah, it is a lot about how people deal, especially with depression. They'll get, they'll drink a lot for it. But in terms of how it's seen in the media, again, that's a broad question because what kind of media are we talking about here? If we're talking about popular media, it's hard because it is seen as this scary thing, in different movies. It's horrifying. Even in shows, people who are affected by bipolar disorder are either ridiculed against or treated differently. So it's hard to see someone in the media as being successful while being affected. In terms of how it's seen in the news and that kind of media, I completely agree. There's nothing that touches on the success of it, and I think that is one of the issues there. No one that I know of, or no one that I've seen, and I would love someone to correct me here, has come out just randomly on a talk show saying, "Yeah, I have bipolar disorder, and I love it, and I'm so thankful that I got the chance to be able to struggle with this," or something along those lines. Something to give people like me, people who are struggling, the chance to see something spectacular. And like you said, if someone has been struggling with it, where are they coming out onto a talk show or in the media, the news, saying, "But I'm better now, and it's because of this, this, and this"?
Yeah. I think I would add that I think Stephen Fry is one of the more prominent people who've come out who says he suffers. I'm not sure if it's just depression or manic depressive, but
yeah. Stephen Fry, and there's also this, the name's not coming to me, but the skater, she's an Olympic skater for Canada. Ugh, I'm going to kill myself. Oh, man. Ugh. So it's hard because of what I mean there, and I really should have been a little bit more specific, but I'm talking about someone who is seen internationally. I'm talking about someone who is...
Well, I didn't bring those out to contradict you because I think it's the exceptions that prove the rule.
Right? Yeah.
That these are such rare cases that it's like, you know, because there's... We know just by the statistical numbers that this is a much bigger issue even in the entertainment industry and all that than we do see with people coming out. I mentioned the theater, and if you look back and you see the sort of reoccurring pattern, the Jim Belushi comes to mind, who suffered from anxiety that led to substance abuse. And then there's Kurt Cobain, who succumbed to bipolar disorder, and there was a history of mental illness in his family. But again, he's known for his suicide and not the underlying mental illness that precipitated the taking of his own life. How do you think the perception of mental illness compared to something like substance abuse in our culture, how these people affect that perception or the confluence? Do you know what I mean?
Actually, I don't. Do you want to go into that a little bit more?
It seems almost like a badge of honor in our society to have been recovered from substance abuse in our culture. And part of that is because we have this celebrity culture that I don't want to say glorifies in it, but there's sort of this sense of forgiveness for a moral failing. And yet, quite often, the substance abuse is, again, another symptom of mental illness, and that this perception of mental illness, which is the real sort of demon in the closet compared to sort of this side effect, substance abuse, and that how famous people can affect our perceptions of both.
Yeah, that's a great point. It is. I think it's kind of like how the eggshell is what you see, but everything underneath it is the egg, right? Like that, it's just the facade that you're seeing. And by that, what I mean is the substance abuse is what you're seeing, but everything that caused it is the mental illness. And why is that not mentioned? I would love to see a step in the direction of, you know, Matthew Perry, to date myself, Matthew Perry addicted to painkillers due to whatever, or Matthew Perry recovering from depression or something like that, and happy about it, you know, making a turn on it and making a spin on this person is being successful. This person dealt with this because of this and is being successful.
Well, let me throw this back at you then. So let's go right at the crux of it. And why are people, relatively speaking, very willing to admit that they have a crack addiction or heroin or alcoholism, but not willing to say that they suffer from depression, anxiety disorder, or bipolar? What is it about our culture that stigmatizes, that makes famous people not want to come out and talk about the underlying issues, but at the same time, we seem to say it's okay for these other equally not good things?
I think it comes down to two separate things. One is longevity. And what I mean by that is, I have to deal with bipolar disorder the rest of my life. I think somebody with depression has to deal with it or might have to deal with it the rest of their life. And it's not that I'm going to have to struggle, but it does mean that I'm going to have to take medication, which is not the end of the world. Some of it's sugar-coated, so that's kind of nice. But in terms of the substance abuse, that is one specific event. It's been dealt with, and I overcame it. You know, especially in the media, it's an I overcame it and that's over. Let's move on. It's never going to have to be mentioned again. But if I come out and say I'm bipolar, then it's something that is over time, something that is always going to be there. You know, if I came out and said, you know, I was a crack addict and that was 10 years ago, no one's going to think about it. No one's ever going to say, you know, bring that up because that was a decade ago. But if I tell someone that I have bipolar disorder, that is a, oh, he still has it now. I think the second part to that is the, should I treat this person differently? And that all comes down to, again, the brain is an organ, or the brain is just a muscle, just like anything else. And if it's damaged, if you are affected by a disorder, that's just, you know, one infliction of the brain. And people don't want to be treated differently because of that affliction. It's kind of like how, you know, you have diabetes. You don't want to be treated differently because you have diabetes, and it's just an infliction of that organ. It's the same thing with bipolar disorder or any other mental illness. You don't want to be treated differently. You don't want to be seen differently. You don't want to say, hey, you have to have a cookie because you haven't had your insulin, or something along those lines. And I think that is definitely something, especially in the media, as an actor, that you don't want to be attached to something like that. You don't want to be treated differently as an actor. And maybe even to go even beyond that, to get a job, they don't want to think that you can't handle it.
Yeah, no, I think actually you brought up, I think, two interesting points. The one, the sense of sort of triumphalism that I have conquered my addiction is, again, one of the reasons why maybe it's seen as a badge of honor. But you also mentioned another thing about, you know, the infected organ, and that, you know, if Johnny Depp goes on The Tonight Show and he says, I have recovered from alcoholism, then it's like, okay, that was over there. You're clean here, right? And I emphasize the word clean because obviously the second step is I am suffering from bipolar disorder and I am currently being on treatment. It's like, oh, as you slide away, so you're still infected with it, and let's sort of quarantine you over there because you are,
you're damaged in a certain way, right? Yeah. Like it's something you want to stay away from. You don't want to cause, you know, a reaction.
Might I catch it from you or something?
Yeah, something along those lines. I mean, it's to really trivialize it. It's like, man, I need to make sure to not put peanut butter out when my friend who has a nut allergy is over. You know, I shouldn't bring up anything depressing because, you know, Matt's coming over. You know, something along those lines.
I don't want to use any of my crazy jokes because, oh, sorry, I didn't mean you.
Yeah, okay. we could talk about those when we put the mute, when the stop the recording.
So it's going to get a little weird, but I'm going to relate a personal incident that happened to me while I was sort of preparing for the segment. I was at a coffee shop that's embedded in a grocery shop. Well, a woman comes in and she starts screaming, saying that we need to stop spying on her fallopian tubes and that they're fascist and yelling some other nonsense and really not to anyone in particular. Well, not that I could tell because I kept my eyes extremely focused on my computer screen. And that act made me feel a bit ashamed and a little disturbed. There's a local person who I assume suffers from either schizophrenia or some other sort of paranoia-inspired illness. She, and this is a different she, she'll walk up and down the streets yelling about how she has the place under surveillance and that she knows that the eye in the sky has her sights on her or something like that. And again, whenever she comes near, I keep my eyes averted with great determination that it's that sort of natural desire to not make eye contact that fear if I do that she might do something. And I bring this up because I started to wonder what effect my strong efforts to not acknowledge their activities, how that might be playing right into their conditions. I mean, if I came into work tomorrow and started yelling at the top of my voice about how the art overlords are telling me that we need to drink more milk, well, at first at least, I suspected people around me would start saying something, recognizing that I was in a state of mental distress. Then again, maybe not. I mean, I didn't. Now, I'm not sure where I'm going with this. I guess first, that this woman with the tubes issue must have felt like she was invisible, that there was some kind of conspiracy against her. Why else would everyone actively ignore her protestations? This disattachment from society and the aloneness that could be provoked in this situation. And second, I started to think, if this was a physical illness, if she suddenly dropped to the ground and started thrashing about, or she just passed out, people would rush over to see if they could lend aid. And I confess, I felt bad that I didn't feel like lending aid to this obviously troubled individual. Your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah. It's hard because as someone who's inflicted by this kind of not as horrible as schizophrenia can be, but even I in that kind of circumstance would be frozen in place thinking, should I say something? Should I help them? And one of the reasons is because we know so little about these illnesses. We know so little about how to help that kind of person, how to change their perspective to calm them down. And it's not even just the lay people like you and me. It's even the professionals. It's hard to deal with somebody in that state of mind. Really, what we do is we take them into the hospital, we diagnose them, we put them in a room, we sedate them, we give them medication to bring them down, is what they say, or to bring them level, and then go from there and try and prevent this from happening again. But it's difficult to try and aid someone in that circumstance, and it's very difficult because we don't know what to do. If someone fell down and was, like you said, thrashing about or convulsing, you hold them down, make sure they don't hit anything. But what do you say to somebody who is screaming about their tubes and that they're wearing an aluminum foil hat and they're going crazy? It's difficult because you think, if they're that crazy at nothing, if I help them, are they going to be crazy at me? It's a scary thought.
And I think part of that too leads into the image that the media portrays, that crazy people are crazy and are capable of doing anything, where we don't seem to have that. Say, I mean, like, I'm an outspoken atheist, and I think that, you know, radical religion can lead to things like terrorism and that sort of stuff, right? But at the same time, I don't feel afraid to deal with someone who's, you know, handing out a Bible or something. It's not that same sort of perception of with the binariness of it, that all crazy people are violent.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, all killers are, you know, they have something wrong with them, or, you know, they're all schizophrenic or something along those lines. And we're afraid. That's one of the things. We're afraid because in the media, you know, we hear a lot about you know, this person who was schizophrenia, you know, waterboarded their kids or something along those lines. Or we see it in the movies, you know, the One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest is a terrifying film, but it is a great film. Don't get me wrong, but there's still horrifying things in it. And I think people still link certain things to old films and the perspective that's given by those and how hard it can be. But I think a lot of it does come down to fear.
And I think one of the things that we see a lot in the States is the penal system being used as a substitute mental health care system because mm-hmm. of the poor treatment. And I mean, I think we can agree that one of the weak points of our own health care system is the mental health care. You stated earlier that you felt fortunate that you not only received effective care, but thanks to your participation in a longitudinal study, your care will be more or less lifetime.
Pretty much. At least my lifetime. Yours will be over in, what, 10 years?
Okay, sure. That's good for you. We started to point out that many people go untreated. Many others self-medicate, which often leads to greater problems down the road. So, Matt, I have, through the magical powers of Radio Freethinker, just made you the Grand Poobah of Canada with absolute powers of government. What will you do?
If I were the king of the castle, it's something Bill Nye always says on whatever he's doing his podcast on. So I thought I'd give him a tip of the hat. Oh man, what would I do? So much money, so much money into it. Where to begin?
Let me focus this. So, you are the government. What things do you think the government should do?
Okay, so if I'm the government, you start allocating resources, and that's the biggest thing, is you start allocating the certain resources to getting better facilities, for one. Let's start with facilities. I'm actually, every time I go by Vancouver General Hospital in Vancouver, they are expanding their mental health care area there. It's a new building. That's the kind of thing that needs to be happening everywhere in all different hospitals. There needs to be a lot bigger, a lot more access, a lot more rooms, that kind of thing. So let's start with that. Doctors need to be directed. Medical school students need to be directed into psychiatry. I think there needs to be more doctors going towards that. Better access to cheap medications. For instance, I am I'm turning 26 in a couple weeks here, which, huzzah, I'm getting old, but that means I'm going off my mom's medical care, and my next bill for my meds is going to be huge. And that's going to finally start being something that's going to affect my life. And it's definitely affecting those who are too poor, to be able to, have access to this kind of thing. So those are three huge things. And to reiterate, better facilities for inpatients and outpatients. So for those who are going through the, you know, quote unquote craziness, so we can get them in. As soon as they're done, we can also take care of them when they're out, which is what I am. I'm an outpatient. More medical student doctors going into psychiatry, so we can have more doctors out there to help them. The third is more access to cheap medications. And even though we do have it good here, we can have it better.
Sounds great, but how are you going to pay for these grandiose schemes of yours? Oh. What are you, a communist?
Oh man, that's another show we're doing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of things. We spend a lot of money on certain different kinds of things that can be spent other places. For instance, we're proposing, I think it's a $50 or $60 million increase in fixing parks and making more parks because Vancouver is expanding. This is $60 million we're talking about here. That's a huge amount of money that can be at least taken some of that and put it more into mental health care. We're already paying a ton of money to increase affordable housing. Well, guess what? If we increase better access to mental health care, those people who are on the streets aren't going to be on the streets anymore. You know, if let's say I was taken off the street and given the exact same care over 8 years or 5 years or even 3 years is when I started being able to really make a difference, I would be out there making money for the economy, and that money can go back into giving more towards mental health and back to Canada.
I'm not quite sure what it says about your politics that the areas that you've chosen to cut back are social housing and parks, whereas I might have mentioned something like our bombing in Iraq or perhaps, income splitting that the government has just proposed. But again, as you say, maybe we'll leave that for another show.
Well, okay. I didn't want to get too far into it, okay? But we just spent, $30 million a plane on – or whatever, how much money we were spending on those terrible planes. There's no point. We can't even use them. We're using them for essentially background noise for the American planes because ours are – already out of date. There's certain things along those lines. I didn't mean cut social housing. What I meant is that we're already doing a lot to help those in need who are quote unquote a lot, but we're already trying to help those in need who are on the streets and that kind of thing. But that is just that's putting a band-aid on it. If we cut it off at the stem by, increasing mental health care, then we can really make a difference.
We've already mentioned at the start of the segment that it's estimated that it costs the economy about $6 billion a year in lost productivity, and that in itself would go a long way to help pay for comprehensive mental health care. Now, so far we've talked about the government solutions, and I'm a big fan of big government. So long, of course, it truly represents the people, and sadly, our current government doesn't. Let's not elect Harper in the Conservative government. 2015, yep, never forget. So I must ask, what do you think is the role of community groups to help deal with these problems? Do they have a role?
Well, yeah, they most definitely have a role. I mean, there's a couple different houses, Covenant House, that kind of thing. There's West Coast Healthcare, I think it's called, or West Coast Mental Health Care House. I'm sorry, but yes, that is something along those lines. There are big community groups out there. And in terms of community groups as a whole, there are even support groups out there for people who have mental illness. There's group counseling sessions for those people out there that really need help on a whole. It's kind of like AA, but for those kinds of things. Places like the Aboriginal Friendship Center, they can definitely lend a huge hand. And I think in terms of a support group I was talking about earlier with my friends and family, a community can be a huge support group. And as soon as you go to one of these events or create one of these events, you've created more friends to help you as a community and as a support network.
So, we talked about the community centers, and I have something to ask you, and you may not have an opinion on this, but and it deals with self-medication. You may have noticed a proliferation locally of dispensaries of a particular herb that
I have no idea what you're talking about, Don.
Do you have any comments about the growth of medical marijuana in the Lower Mainland? A little off topic, you know, but I thought, you know, just to...
Yes, you know, we could, if we have a chance in Vancouver to talk about marijuana, then we always take the chance, don't we? Oh, boy. Yeah, it's actually something that that actually really rings true. I have had my run-ins with Mary Jane in the past. It's a big... this may not be related to everyone, but it's a huge trigger for me. I haven't smoked in about 5 years now, since the 2010 Olympics. So I guess that would be 4 years, but, you know, creeping up on five. So it's a big trigger for me. However, it can actually be something that keeps you down. So if someone is someone who's affected by, you know, hypomania, which is type 2, or, you know, like I said, just above normal, you can actually keep yourself lower by smoking, by toking up, by getting high, or whatever the kids are calling it these days. I've been out of the game for too long. But actually I do know somebody who was, taking mood stabilizers and, stopped, and, they are definitely self-medicating. And, I actually don't have a problem with medical marijuana. I think it's a fantastic thing. I'm sure I'll get props from a lot of people there. But it's something that needs to be talked, about with your medical professional. There's a lot of ways that it can help. There's a lot of ways that a lot of different medications, and actually, they're doing studies on, different drugs as well. So ketamine for PTSD and depression, you know, magic mushrooms for schizophrenia. So there's a lot of different things that are going on, but again, it's something that needs to be talked about with your medical professional, for sure.
And I think that's a good place where it should be, is it should be dealt as a medical thing. And not some moral issue that it seems to have been conflated with.
Yeah, and it is another type of self-medication. Just like 50 years ago when my grandfather was having issues, he was drinking whiskey every night. You know, weed is a lot of better way to go, and it definitely causes a more positive effect, and therefore obviously has medicinal purposes. So, yeah, it's a good way to go.
Well, that's great. And if we have all these great groups out there, what else could we as a community do? Well, no, let's make this personal. Matt, what can I, Dawn, how can I make the world a better place, or mental health a...
Yeah, I mean, a blank check would really help. Oh, man. As an individual, we were actually, you know, jokingly kind of talking about voting, not voting Harper into government. And that's actually, I really want to mention something that you can do. Vote. If you vote for, somebody who actually supports this kind of thing, that's a huge, step in the right direction. You know, it's hard to, you know, we're talking about the $6 billion a year loss in productivity. That means that if we vote for someone who's going to be helping, you're voting for a good economy right there. So that's one thing that obviously can be done. As an individual, one thing that's really huge, and I know it's really minor, but just if, you know, be supportive to those around you. If somebody you know is, you know, going through something, you can say, hey, you all right? Or you want to talk about it? And if they do come out and they do say something to you, don't be weird. You know, I've gone through telling a lot of different people. And that's because I, you know, like I said, I've been through this for 8 years. I've decided to take the step to, you know, obviously telling the world. So, it's really important that if you tell someone, as if I tell you, Donald, don't be weird about it. Right. And you're doing a spectacular job of it. I may say so myself. But I think that's a really big thing. So, and obviously volunteer, help out, donate if you really wanted to, but just those passive things, vote for somebody who's going to really make a difference for us, voice your concerns, and support someone on the individual. There's definitely going to be somebody in your family, or at least in your immediate family, that's going to be going through something at some time. Guess what? That goes for your friends as well.
And I hate to put you on the spot like this because I know you've prepared so well for this. But let's say one of my loyal listeners is someone who thinks they're suffering from mental illness. What should they do?
Yeah, there's a lot of different helplines out there that you can really call. If you feel like you are someone in an immediate crisis, you can actually call 1-800. This is a terrible number, but 1-800-SUICIDE. It's someone that you can call any time of day. It's free. I know people who have used it, and it's really good to get a hold of somebody who will listen to you right now. And that's one of the big things is if you don't have a support network, you can talk to somebody right away. There's other support lines that you can actually call if you're in a crisis, something along those lines. An information line to just get information on this is 604-310-6789, and I know that doesn't mean much, but it's, again, a 24/7 service helpline. But one of the biggest things is just go on to your local government website. When I was preparing for the show here, literally all I did is just search up Helpline Vancouver. And it gave me so many different sources for me to get help. And you can do that too. I know it's hard, and I'm talking to you directly because guaranteed there's somebody out there affected. I'm talking to you. I know it's hard. I've been there. But all you need to do is just look it up and get some help.
We should end right there. I don't think we need to have any more, but
oh yeah.
Well, I think maybe it's time we stopped and we sort of took a breath. I'll leave it up to my loyal listeners to decide how they'll wish to improve the mental health of this nation and encourage those who think they need help to seek help. In fact, I encourage you to send in your suggestions, your personal endeavors, about however you are trying to make a difference, or even your own experiences with mental illness that have affected your life, and how the current system has failed or succeeded. And you can send that in to info@radiofreethinker.com. Well, that wraps up things for this week. As a courtesy to my guest, I extend an invitation to mount the podium, or take the mic in this case, as long as you promise to do so in an appropriate manner. So, to give you a minute or so, tell our audience something that you'd like to share with them. What's the last words, Matt?
Dang, I have to keep this appropriate. I'll have to rewrite my whole statement. First of all, I think the Canucks are going to do spectacular this year. And anyone who says otherwise, come on, really? But on a serious note, mental health, anyone who's affected knows that it is a serious infliction. However, just because it's serious doesn't mean it's something that has to ruin your life. I feel lucky that I have bipolar disorder. I went through hell for 3 years. I was sleeping for 16 hours. I dropped out of school about 4 times. I was in and out of hospital 6 times in 2 years. It is tough, but I went through the ringer and came out the other side as a fantastic person, if I say so myself.
And you are unanimous in that decision.
But it's true. I wouldn't be here today talking to you, also, Don. But I wouldn't be here being able to promote myself being able to help those if I didn't go through this. And I feel so lucky that I am. I feel like I'm a better person. I'm more positive on life. I'm more patient with people. And I actually get along with others more because I care. Before I was, well, a little bit of a douche, but this happened to me. Maybe I was chosen. Who knows? But all I know is you have the chance to write your own future. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I decided to be happy about this. I decided to take ownership of my affliction, and I'm happy about it. Sure, I don't get to sleep over everywhere because I have to have my meds and all that kind of thing, but I'm happy about it. And that's when I really turned the corner, is I took ownership, and I'm happy about it. Get help. And be proud of what you have. Do everything you can to be better, to be a better self. To those of you who want to help, vote for someone who does. And also, just be there to lend an ear. I think that's all I got.
And don't be like Van Gogh and cut it off, because that would be a bad thing. Yes,
that would be terrible.
Well, it's time. Say thank you. Goodbye, Matt.
Thank you and goodbye, Matt. But one more thing to add on to what Don said about sending in your personal stories. If you want that to be passed on to me, let him know. He'll pass it on to me. And if you need to talk, if you need more advice, please let me know. And I'd be happy to lend my ear, at least in a electronic sense, to help you out.
And this is Don saying, eyes open, minds on.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Thanks for listening to Radio Free Thinker. Remember to visit us online at radiofreethinker.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you have any local skeptical events you would like us to mention on the air, email us at info@radiofreethinker.com.
Venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. What a rising of the Milky Way. What a cosmos is full.
Subscribe to the Radio Free Thinker podcast and take it on the go and download previous episodes. Subscribe via iTunes or at radiofreethinker.com. Remember to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at CITRRFT. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts to share with us, email at info@radiofreethinker.com.
Understanding empowers you.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power Science World for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Prices still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge or off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Hempology 101 is a student-run organization here to educate the public about the benefits of hemp and cannabis. Fast fact! Hemp is a renewable, sustainable source of food and fiber. Fast fact! Your body contains anandamide, which is part of the same family of substances as THC. To learn more, Look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/hempology101UBC. Or come to one of our great events. And don't forget, legalization through education.